You three, see those barrels? I asked. They nodded. Get them aboard that cart and pull it over here, I ordered. They did so quickly and with some grunting, and once the cart was in front of me, I hopped on. Now follow those women back to the road. Do not give me any excuses to take your heads. They again nodded. Sitting on top of a barrel, I watched them closely as they pulled the cart through the forest to the road. I remained calm outwardly, but inside, my heart raced, my breath came short, and I was terrified of every shadow in the trees. When we broke out onto the road, the caravan was still slowly passing us by. Voydan and three of his men rushed up to us. They looked at my prisoners with some shock. I leaped down from the cart, my bloodied axe over my shoulder, and grabbed Voydan by the arm. I would talk to you over here, I said, and led him around to the other side of a wagon, dodging the aurochs. Then I let my legs fold, and my breath come in staggered gasps. Piss on them, I spat, my voice breaking with fear. There were five of them, and one of me. Five! Voydan held me up. Come, you need to go lie down, he said gently. You've done enough. He walked me back down the road to a bunk wagon, empty of occupants. What are you? I asked. But he shoved me up onto the platform. Go inside. Rest for a moment. Gather your thoughts. I will deal with these remaining men. My hands shook, and I watched him pace along the wagon for a moment, then dart through the caravan and disappear. I crept into the darkness and curled up on someone's unfamiliar-smelling bunk. I kept curling up until my body could bear being squeezed by itself no more. When Voydan finally came back, it might have been after half a day. All I'd done was stare at a chipped piece of wood on the wall. I'd felt that the wagon had stopped. Maybe the whole caravan had. I knew dimly something was going on, but until that moment hadn't cared about finding out. Voydan said nothing, but sat in the back of the wagon and waited until I rolled over to look at him. It was different, I finally said. Not like the execution, or when I went for the raider in anger. Voydan just sat there. I continued. I had to stay in control and calm. I had to win the fight first.
You did well, said Voydan. Never doubt it. You are a good fighter.
Why did the caravan stop? I asked. It's not supposed to stop, right? Voydan grimaced.
Our way is blocked by a scouting party. Somewhere out in the woods north of us, a man called Jiva has been raising the discontented to fight against the Pykans. You met five of their number earlier. They're all from culled villages and towns out there.
What do they want?
Food, weapons, anything we have that we can trade. Their stores ran low in the march south through bramble and forest. They look hungry enough to attack us for our stores, and Jarl is reluctant to trade with them as the Pykans will be upset. So, negotiation continues.
Ah, I turned back over. After many long moments, I twisted around and found Voydan still there. I will be fine, I said. But the warrior shook his head.
Few are ever truly fine after what you just did, after what we do. We can get back to being a reflection of our former self, but it's somehow not quite the same, and only another like us understands what we mean.
I know. But I want to be left to myself for now, I told him. Just for now.
I will send for you when it is time for the night watch, he said. I will need all the warriors I can fetch by my side, particularly if Jarl and the scouts can't come to an agreement.
I felt the wagon shake as he stepped out onto the road. 3. Aneska crawled into the wagon as the sun left its place in the sky and woke me up. Voydan needs you. Thanks. I crawled out of bed and before I could leave the wagon, Aneska grabbed my shoulders.
"Thank you for saving us," she said, and tapped her tattoos. "I would say my investment in you has been more than repaid, and that I am in your debt now."
I wasn't sure what to say, so I hugged her back.
"You should carry a dagger and practice how to stab someone," I whispered to her. "All of you should.
We're just talliers and cooks and supply keepers. We're not you, executioness." I sighed.
"I'm just like you. I'm in the middle of my life. A mother who helped in a butcher shop. There is nothing special about me, I swear to you."
But I could see Aneska didn't believe me. I crawled out of the wagon and got to the road, where lantern light showed a small group of muddy men in tattered peasants' clothes, carrying crates of vegetables and dried meats. Trudged quickly down the road, weaving in and out of the caravan as they did so. They all carried simple swords. I saw a single crossbow man in blue cloth farther down, surcoat slapping the backs of his knees. Their faces did look gaunt as they slipped off into the shadows just past the caravan's edges. At the front of the stalled caravan, Boydan stood with Jarl by the roadmaster's wagon. They welcomed me into their discussion.
"One of those scouts says there are pikens coming down the road," Boydan told Jarl. "They are a half hour away. We need to get moving again so that everything looks normal."
"Don't fret, Boydan. The pikens have always respected the neutrality of the caravan. I'm more worried about Jiva's men here. If a few hungry idiots rush our wagons for stores or loot, and we fight back, this will be an expensive mess,"
Jarl snapped. He eyed the passing remnants of the scouts.
"Is that the last of them?"
"Yes," Boydan said.
"Good. Send the command. We're moving along." "Relax, Boydan. Relax. I'll relax when the Piken party moves past us to their destination," Boydan said. "If they know about Jiva, we don't want to get caught in the middle."
"Yes, yes," Jarl said quickly. "I know. So let's get those command flags snapping, guardsmen."
Boydan ran forward, shouting orders. The fire wagon to the front lurched forward, and then Boydan's wagon of guards followed. A green flag with a triangle in the middle lurched up the pole with a swaying lantern at the top. All along the column, the same flag raised, and the caravan began to move. I went to follow Boydan, but Jarl grabbed my shoulder.
"We have a Piken prisoner in a wagon, and everyone in the caravan knows about it. I want you to guard him. I don't want to ransom him until we get to the city. We get more for him that way."
I lowered my voice. I couldn't raise my hand against someone from the caravan. Jarl laughed.
"Oh, you won't have to, Tana. If I let it be known the executioness is guarding our prisoner, then I doubt anyone in the caravan will be interested."
"I don't like that name," I protested. But Jarl held up a hand.
"That is too bad. It has stuck. Now take your axe and go," Jarl ordered. "What in all the damned halls are we doing moving so slowly? You said it was urgent we get out of here, Boydan. Not something to do in our damned spare time." "You have come around to my way, I see," Boydan shouted back.
Jarl grumbled and climbed up on the roadmaster's wagon, while I stalked back down the length of the caravan for guard duty. After I'd climbed into the wagon and sat on the bench against the wall, the piken stirred. He crawled to the bars that kept him prisoner and looked out into what he could see of the night from his prison.
"I saw those scouts," he said evenly.
The dull red flicker of lanterns swaying in the wagon's ceiling pulled the piken's figure out of the dark. I said nothing. The man sat, his side against the bars.
"Have it your way. They are angry at us for what we did, and yet they still haven't learned the lesson we strive to teach the world. They think they can take us in battle, but all they will do is throw away their lives."
I didn't want to talk to the man. I felt like he would force that old me, the unskilled me, the unblooded me, to re-emerge from where she'd been pushed over the last weeks. The me that would be scared of him. But I felt calm, sitting there in the dark, the axe across my lap. I was a deep river, unhurried and powerful, not a frothy, shallow stream. And what lessons do you think you teach the world? I asked. Other than your barbarism? He jumped back. You're a woman. I smiled. I had control of this conversation, not him. There was no fear in my voice when I said, Yes, so I've always been told. He moved closer to the bars and looked down at the axe on my lap. Are you that woman? The one I hear them call the executioners? From the Far East? My name is Tana, of Lesser Kaim, I told him. I saw his shadow relax. I was once a butcher and married to a husband called Jorda. My sons were Juram and Set, and yes, some call me the executioners. I could hear him draw in his breath as I claimed the name for the first time. Are you here to kill me? I imagined him here in this cell, hearing that someone whose life he'd destroyed and children he'd stolen was amongst the caravan. He must have had many sleepless nights. Which was good. I am here to guard you, for now. I placed the butt of the axe against the floor and folded my hands around the top. Killing you now would not help me understand where my family may be. He remained quiet for a while, so I took the axe and hit the bars with it. He jumped back. Your family is lost to you, he snapped. Why do you say that? I demanded. Getting off the bench I'd sat on. I didn't come this far to turn back. He moved away from the bars. I moved closer. I will not kill you, but I think maybe I will come to maim you before we reach Pika. I think an arm would be acceptable to me. You could still talk after that, right? I don't know, because I've never tried anything like that before. But I think an arm is a fair thing after all. What is an arm compared to a family? We can both live our lives incomplete. The Pican raider stepped forward to the bars. You'd risk it all for this quest? I looked him in the eyes. Yes. I have nothing good to tell you, he said, because I doubt you'll catch your children. You would have sold them by now? I asked. Is that what you do, you twisted creatures? No one young is sold, the Pican said, a note of outrage seeping into his voice. Their minds are moldable. They can be taught. The young can be saved. What are you talking about? I demanded. Your sons will have been taken to the Aftans of Pika. There they are taught the way with hundreds, no, thousands of youths from all over these diseased lands, every day. Until the moment their minds crack open and the inherent truth of the way falls upon them. It is then that they earn the right to go to the Southern Isles, far from these coasts. Why would they want to go there? A pilgrimage. To see the lands where the way is all. To see where we came from, long before we took the city of Pika and made it our home. Your children will be closer to the end of their time at the Aftan than at the beginning now. I wanted to hit him with the butt of the axe, but restrained myself. He was talking. Even if I didn't want to hear it, he was talking about what was happening right now to Juram and Set. Why? I asked. Why do your people do all this? Why steal my children? The prisoner's voice crackled with anger. Because you don't deserve them! He grabbed the bars. We have them heavily guarded and protected, and when the way gives itself over to them, they will leave for their pilgrimage, and when they return, they will bring light to this darkened land you have created. What are you talking about? I sat face to face with his fiery anger. Look around you, he whispered. Your towns are fallen. Bramble eats and chokes at all you do. And still you can't release yourselves from the grip of the sickness that causes it. Magic? I asked. You're talking about magic. It's outlawed. That is why I was an executioner. We control it.
You control nothing, or your greatest empire would not have fallen. You are all sick with magic's use, and you are not, I said.
No, he insisted.
Your peoples try to use fear and death to stop magic, but it will always continue. The individual will always have a use that seems to be needed, even when compared to the good of all. You have no true beliefs like the way to guide you. Just heapings of gods that take you long after you destroy everything in this life. As long as your afterlives are pleasant, what reason do you have to ever stop the bramble?
You are all missionaries? I asked.
Here to spread this thing you call the way by kidnapping our children? Is that what this madness is all about? Is that why you have destroyed my family and my town?
It is to save you from yourselves, he said sadly, as if I were a child who did not know any better.
You want to know why I came here, to this cursed land? Let me tell you. One morning, far off in the southern isles, I woke up and found a small grey thorn growing in the wall around my yard. And over time its threads spread, and chopping it back did nothing. Its roots continued to spread. One day my wife and my son took it upon themselves to pull up every root by hand. They slipped into the deepest sleep, and then from there to death. That is why I am here, executioners.
He trembled, and I understood his rage. I'm sorry to hear about your family. The Piken continued,
I'm here because my people forgot magic and left it behind us when we settled the islands and left the northern coasts. I'm here because we believe Borzai judges all that we do, including what we do to this world that the gods love. I'm here because, like the people of Janpara, you can't help yourselves, and we suffer altogether as a result. So we try to stop you from killing us, as well as yourselves.
This is all about magic and bramble, I said.
What else could it be about? The man inside the cell asked.
A trumpeting sound came from the distance.
The Piken sucked in his breath. The cavalry is here, he said. That is no small culling party, but an army. You should leave this place and go back to where you came from. Start a new life. I am too old to start a new life or family, I said. And that is a shame, he said. But there is nothing for you in Pika.
My children are in Pika, I hissed. There is everything for me there. I could hear a distant thudding.
They're not stopping! They're not stopping!
Someone screamed from up the caravan. I stepped away from the inside of the wagon and pulled myself up the side so I could look down the road. Forms lumbered out of the dark in front of the fire crew's wagon, elephants with armored tusks swinging from side to side as they charged forward. They ran, and they were indeed not stopping. The aurochs, harnessed to the wagons up front, screamed and threw themselves against their harnesses. The roadmaster's wagon toppled over as the beasts fought to get free. Boydan's men raised their arquebuses as one and fired. The leading elephant shrieked and reared, then brought its massive feet down on the wagon, splintering and destroying it, throwing men from it like so much chaff in the wind. I jumped down and ran alongside the caravan toward them, seeing more elephants moving through the large cloud of smoke left by the fired arquebuses. The dominating creatures had slowed down in the smoke. They walked three abreast and four rows deep. I saw Jarl and Boydan duck for cover behind the roadmaster's wagon as a sudden flurry of crossbow bolts thwacked into the wooden sides and clattered off the road. I joined them, slamming my shoulder next to Jarl's against the ruins of his wagon.
I don't understand, he repeated. I don't understand. They couldn't have found out we sold those rebel scouts' supplies so soon, could they, Boydan?
The warrior shrugged.
There are many other sins they could have decided to call you on, Jarl.
But I bribed them all, Boydan, the roadmaster spat. We make them rich. I use none of the magics they despise.
Can you guarantee that no one else in this caravan ever used any magic? Boydan asked.
An elephant bellowed.
Jarl glanced over his shoulder and muttered,
Borzai, be merciful when I meet you today.
Boydan looked behind us.
We need to retreat, he said. They're getting ready for another charge.
The remains of the guard wagon exploded and lit the entire night. The fireball blistered us with heat and roiled overhead, blunted by the now burning carcass of the roadmaster's wagon.
Aquabus powder, Boydan explained with a sudden smile.
That will give us cover. Now run!
Elephants shrieked, and pikens swore loudly as they struggled to control the chaos. Several arrows hissed by as we stood and ran. Jarl gurgled, then pitched back. He looked like a pin cushion, his ample body pierced from all angles by crossbow bolts. He was still alive, amazingly, crawling along the road and swearing. Piken crossbowmen charged us from the side of the road where they'd walked around the burning debris. Boydan ran at them as they reloaded their devices. He began slicing arms, throats, and bellies. I buried my axe into the chest of a startled man who pointed his sword at me. But before we could do more, the ground shook, and out from the smoke of that last great explosion, the war elephants charged once more. Crossbowmen fired down at us from wooden platforms on the elephants' backs. A piken in purple robes stalked over to the roadmaster, a crossbow in hand.
You have sinned against us all, he shouted. You have failed to keep control of your people, and failed to keep them from using that which harms us all.
Get away from the wagon,
Boydan said, shoving me away from what was about to happen.
It's all...
He didn't finish his sentence. A bolt buried itself in his neck. He fell. I lunged forward to go to him, but bolts struck the ground around me. The battle is won long before the fighting, I thought. And this was a lost battle. I spun and ran for the forest to the north of the road where it looked thick, and I thought I could lose myself. The trumpeting of the war elephants faded as I pushed deeper into the wild. There was some bramble here. I could feel the soft threads tugging at my skirts as I brushed past. But I couldn't slow down, despite the dark. I could hear the sounds of someone following me, the glow of their torch bobbing through the dark shadows far behind. With no light, I could only walk so fast without smacking into trees and branches. There were three torches now, I saw with a glance back. They gained on me, as they could see what was in front of them. Every step north away from the road, every minute bumping through the scrub, took me further from Piker and my sons. I began to regret the time spent enjoying the slow wend of the caravan along the road, Anezka's quiet commands, and the chatter of the tally women, the sweet smell of the ocean, the comfort of food, and of Boydan's company. Yes, I missed him. It was a piece ripped away from me. Not like the piece missing inside me that was my family, but it was another cut that left me hardening up, like bramble when it wasn't totally killed. As I ran, I hardened even further than I had before. I pushed through tall grass and broke out into a clear area on the edge of a small lake. Pebbles crunched under my feet. How long had I kept moving through the woods? An hour? If I kept running, the pikens with torches would exhaust me, then easily capture me. So I crouched low by the grass's boundary, axe readied, to make my stand. The first man broke from the grass, his torch held high in one hand, spear in another. His spiked helmet glinted in the torchlight, as did the rest of the armor buckled to him. I slammed the axe, point first, as if it were a spear, into the face of the helmet as it turned, suddenly suspicious, in my direction. Blood splattered the shaft of the axe, and the torch and spear clattered to the pebbles. I stepped back as the other two pikens slowly parted the grasses on either side of me. They looked down at their dead comrade and kept their distance, but moved along the grass boundary to cut me off from running away. They tossed their torches down to the pebbles and gripped their spears in both hands.
"You're a woman," the one to my left said, surprise in his voice. "Why do you face us?"
I backed up, my feet wetted now by the shallow water, trying to face both of them.
"Because you attacked." "Drop your spears and leave me be," I said.
"You killed Masiaka there," the man said,
faceless behind his mask of protective bronze.
"We will not turn back now."
These were pikens, practiced and deadly, in full armor. They were not the ragged rebels I'd bested this morning, which now seemed an eternity ago. These men wore armor, and their spears gave them reach. I'd killed their friend by surprise. They, on the other hand, would not die quickly. I looked for some way to get out of this fight.
I was in the caravan. I did not ask to be attacked.
"It is too late," the piken on the right said.
My fingers loosened on the axe, getting ready for either man to attack me. The pikens raised their spears, both of them out of reach of my axe, and they got ready to thrust them at me. But just as they stepped forward, crossbow bolts ripped out of the grass and smacked through their armor. With grunts, they dropped to the pebble beach, armor crashing against the stone, spears clattering with them. Five crossbowmen stepped out onto the pebbles. One of them was a short man with sweaty, raggedy hair limp over his forehead, dressed in a green robe. He slung the large wooden crossbow over his shoulder.
"You are a brave woman, facing two pikens on your own," he said with a laugh. "You may thank us for the favor we did you later."
I stared at the corpses. "Three," I said to the man. I pointed to the dead one almost at his feet, and he pushed a torch in the body's direction to examine it.
"Well, well, well," he said.
"And you did me no damn favor," I continued. I didn't like the thank us later part. I wanted to make sure they would think a little further before making assumptions about me. "The caravan still burns. The pikens still ravage the land as they please. Nothing has changed." The man looked thoughtful.
"So you are from the caravan?"
"Yes." I still stood apart from them, hoping that they would move on without me. I had it in my head that I would start walking west in the hopes of getting to Pika somehow. Though, as Jarl had said, it was hard to get into the city. Without the caravaner's help, I wasn't sure how I would do it, but I would have to think of something. The man in the green robes looked back at me, then gestured at the bloodied axe.
"There is more than one man's blood on there.
More than one man attacked me back at the caravan."
He looked thoughtful.
"Did you see how many war elephants charged?"
"I saw at least 12 from the roadmaster's wagon," I said.
12,
said one of the other men.
"I told you, we were sold bad information. They will rip through us like paper."
The green-robed man looked down at the stones.
"We will need to recruit more men."
His voice sounded bitter as he turned and looked out into the trees.
"We will not try to take Pika this year, then."
"You're Jiva," I realized.
"I am Jiva," the man said. "My commanders and I here were about to go scout the Pikan forces out there with our own eyes. We were hoping to avoid clashing with them until closer to Pika, but it seems they know we're out here."
One of the men behind Jiva spoke up.
"What she says about the elephants is the same the other caravanners who escaped into the woods say. It's not worth the risk."
Jiva looked annoyed.
"I know, I know. We'll return to camp."
"You have other caravanners at your camp?" I asked.
"A few survivors our scouts started finding in the woods," Jiva said. "That is what prompted us to come take a look."
I stared at him for a while, thinking about how to get to Pika, about the elephants, about what it would take to regain my children. Then I spoke without thinking. If you are not going to use your army any time soon, would you mind if I borrowed it to do what you wish to wait on? I asked. Jeeva's commanders spluttered with laughter. But Jeeva did not. His dark eyes narrowed, and anger surfaced in them.
Who are you to mock me?
I rested my axe over my shoulder, hanging my arm over the shaft to balance it. I am the executioner's. One of the commanders stopped laughing.
You do exist, he said.
Jeeva glanced at him.
What idiocy are you talking about? The refugees who came to us several weeks ago talk about an axe woman who faced 40 pikens on her own, defending Lesser-Kaim from the culling until she fell from a sleeping spell they cast on her.
Pikens don't use magic, Jeeva said. And if she is really the executioner, she wasn't exactly killing them by the gross here, was she?
I cleared my throat. You interrupted me.
Come and go back to your home like the rest of us, Jeeva said. We will give you some water and food, what we can spare. The Alakanas will be excited to see you. Be glad you live.
I am not glad I live, I shouted at him. I do not share your cowardice. The Pikens stole my family from me. They burned my home to the ground. I have nothing left. Nothing but the hope of getting to Pika.
Jeeva glowered.
I am here for the same reason. To fight back against the Cullings. They took a daughter of mine, and I want my vengeance. But to call me a coward? Well, it seems that you are eager to get yourself killed tonight.
And you aren't? I looked at the commanders around him. The Pikens are looking for you, aren't they?
My caravan was not the thing they came to destroy, was it? We were just a bonus. If you break apart to hide, it will be easier for them to take their time and seek out your parts.
Jeeva's commanders looked at each other.
She's right. Once we split up, they can take their time to hunt us down one by one like dogs.
We have little in the way of supplies, Jeeva said. And judging by the force that attacked your caravan, which is 200 or so strong, with 12 war elephants, you say, we are outmanned. Fighting men are in short supply throughout the lands, thanks to the culling. We don't have many horses for cavalry. The fight is over.
I shook my head. The fight isn't over. You are just not able to see how best to bring it to them.
You think you are a better commander than me?
No, I said. I know nothing about armies or supply trains, but I do see things that men do not.
Jeeva, at first furious, now snapped his fingers. Then tell me what you see that I do not, woman, and I'll judge your words.
I had caught him like a fish and had his interest.
You think about their numbers and whether you can compare yours to theirs, like two boys seeing who can piss the farthest.
As I had intended, the warlord jerked back from my words as if slapped.
Listen, axe bitch,
I spoke with a low voice, completely forcing him to stop in order to hear what I was saying. His commanders leaned forward. The Pikens control the road. You can skulk in the woods like this, avoiding confrontation, or you get an army so vast there is no hope for the Pikens at all.
Since we have no vast army but a couple hundred men, you think we should remain here, starving and hidden? Jeeva asked.
No, starving accomplishes nothing, I said. But with only 200 men, you are not of much use. No, what I propose is you let me help you build an army so vast, so large, the Pikens will have no choice but to fold. They might not even choose to fight. And, I thought, we would win the battle before even setting foot on the field.
Jeeva folded his arms and laughed at me. And where shall I find that army, executioner? Shall I pull it out of my arse? Will you magic all the trees in this forest to suddenly take up my cause?
I did not say anything, or change my expression, but waited until one of the commanders repeated Jeeva's question.
Where will you find this army?
The lands are short of young men, due to the culling, but they are not short of angry, venomous mothers like me, whose families have been destroyed and their towns scattered, and yet they live.
They were the backbone of the caravan before it was destroyed today. They haggle and trade in towns all up and down the coast. No doubt they even helped supply your army at times. There is your army, Jeeva. An army of executionesses, ready to throw themselves at the walls of Pika like I am. No less thirsty for blood. No less able to be led into battle. No less able to kill when armed well. Jeeva unfolded his arms.
They will not fight as well as a man. Face me with your sword, then, and find out how well a woman can fight, I said, using all my strength to banish fear from my voice.
Jeeva eyed my axe. Then he pointed at one of his commanders. The man stepped forward, and his sword flashed out faster than I had expected, but I shoved it aside with the axe, clumsily. On the second swing, I caught the blade in the curve of the axe's blade, and then swung the axe handle about to crack the man under the chin while his sword was still held away. I leaped back from his next slice and smiled to see the blood and cracked teeth in his mouth. He growled then and began slashing quickly at me. I backed up farther and farther into the water as I kept the long blade away, almost tripping over my skirts in the mud that oozed under me. We grunted, striking and clanging steel together. He was stronger, he was faster, and he would take me down. But I refused him an easy kill. By the end, when we both stood in hip-deep water, panting, sizing each other up, Jeeva finally stood up from where he'd been squatting to watch us.
"Good enough," he said, "good enough. What will we arm this new army with?"
"Arquebuses, where you can afford it," I said over my shoulder, still eyeing the commander before me. "Axes, where you cannot."
"An arquebus is an expensive weapon for vain lords and the rich caravan. Do I look made of gold?"
But I could hear in his voice that I had won, that he was taking me seriously.
"It took me a week to learn to shoot the arquebus. You'd have an army in that time. Anything else you want of me besides what little fortune my army has amassed, then?"
With my axe still in front of me, I looked over at him.
"Yes, I have another demand. We need a woman called Anezka from the caravan, if your scouts can find her among the survivors who are fleeing. She will be our link to getting us the supplies we need and a new army."
I needed a quartermaster.
Jeeva clapped his hands. "It will be done. If she is alive and can be found. Now both of you come in from the water. We need to return to camp and rest. Tomorrow we need to get farther into the woods."
I held my axe in one hand and held out my other to my opponent. He spat a tooth out, then grinned and took the offered hand. 4. It did not happen as quickly as I wanted, but it happened nonetheless. First, with Anezka by my side, we recruited tally women from the remains of the caravan and hagglers from the nearby villages. They melted off into the chill of the northern forests with us, where the Pikans had to get off their horses and brave the bramble and tight brush. Forges in half-destroyed towns built arquebus barrels, and woodsmen in the remains of once great cities crafted stocks for us. Women all over began to carry axes, no matter where they went or what hour of day it was. And the Pikans did not know that all throughout their lands, women taught other women how to fight with an axe or reload their arquebuses, and that those women taught others. For what men paid close attention to what women did together? Too few. And those few that paid too much attention found an axe buried in their skull. Anezka's old caravan contacts kept food and supplies moving throughout old forest trails to us. Decimated by the lack of trade and cullings, many were all too happy to help us, in revenge for the caravan's destruction and antipathy to Pika. Jeeva slunk into a gloom after the first month.
"An army of widows," he complained. "We will be laughed at and destroyed. So take us on raids," I told him. kill anyone friendly to Pykans, burn their temples, but we will keep the women in hoods so that we don't reveal ourselves just yet. You will see how strong they are in real battle. Jiva resisted at first, but eventually took women armed with axes. 50 men and 50 women fell upon one of the larger towns near Pyka, overwhelming the 30 or so Pykans guarding the temples there. I watched the turrets of their temple topple into the flames with grim satisfaction, and then galloped with my sisters and brothers back into the protection of the northern forests. And that was the last time Jiva spoke of weakness. His men stopped huddling off in the corner of the camp, feeling outnumbered. They passed among the women, and ate and joked with us. "And now we have an army," Anezka muttered to me when she saw that happen. I'd started to forget my previous life. My new life was weeks and weeks of drills, transporting the parts of arquebuses and walking through dangerous forests. "But do we have enough?" I wondered out loud. "We have as many as we dare recruit," Anezka said. "Any more? My supply routes fail or we go broke. We have a month of supplies, money, and goodwill left." She had a long scar on her cheek, given to her when the caravan was destroyed. It had been easy to recruit her. She'd gone from smiling caravanner to bloodthirsty soldier. Anything that would destroy Pyka or end with a Pykan's death, she enjoyed. Whenever I questioned why she stood by my side, she would once again tap her forearms and reply, "I still owe you the greatest debt." Though with all the danger we had faced together, I couldn't imagine that to be true anymore. She carried a dagger now, along with her axe and a heavy blunderbuss on her back, carved with images of death and destruction along the stock and barrel. She even wore a silvered image of Tankan holding a spear. It hung around her neck on a leather thong. It was not the halls of the merchantmen that Anezka hoped to spend eternity in now, but the halls of a warrior god. "Then I guess we're going to have to convince Jiva. It's time to march," I said, and grabbed Anezka's forearm. "And that it's time to tear Pyka down." We swept south at first, and then westward. Jiva's men took the front guard and fought any resistance, but there was little of that as we quickly advanced along the same spice road I'd traveled some 6 months ago. Just Pykan scouting parties, who usually galloped back up the road to take their reports to the city. The road, I noticed, was more overgrown, more thick with bramble along the sides. But even that began to lessen. The woods and trees faded into hilly grasses and small farmsteads recently abandoned. We trudged like a normal army for the plains of Pyka. When we turned the last curve of the spice road, I gasped. The fields of Pyka spread out before us, but they'd been shorn of what crops the laborers could harvest. The rest burned so that our army could not have it. Everyone had moved back behind the protective walls of the city. The sloping valley sprawled for miles on its way out to the ocean, which was a distant glimmer. To the north were hills and mountains. It was against the foothills to the north that the stone walls of Pyka made a giant U before the mountain. Behind those were several smaller rings of walls higher up the slope of the city. What a city it was! Rows and rows of streets and houses and windows and parapets that clung to the slope seemed to go on and on, only petering out when the hillside became so steep as to make building impossible. Jiva laughed as he watched me from a horse that walked slowly along with us. "Do you think it's still so possible to take the city now?" he asked. "The battle was already won before we arrived," I said. "Those walls would not fall easily, though."
"Maybe, maybe," Jiva said, and spurred his horse on.
"He's a bit excited," Anezka observed.
"A boy before battle," I replied. We trickled through the empty farms and markets until we came to a stop on the edge of the fields just outside the thick walls. An armored piken with a flag of negotiation flapping from a pole held in his saddle waited for us. One of Jeeva's commanders rode out to meet him. When he came back, the commanders waved me over. Jeeva threw a piece of parchment my way. I looked down at it. I couldn't read. The words made no sense to a butcher from Lesser Kime. So I looked back up at Jeeva. What is it?
The Hierarch of Pika wants to talk to you, Jeeva said.
Me? The bitterness on Jeeva's face deepened.
I think he believes the Executionist to be the mind behind the army. The word has spread before us that the Great Executionist marches with us. The lady who destroyed an entire Pikan army herself, after they razed Lesser Kime.
I ignored the sarcasm in his voice. I know nothing about tactics or negotiations, I said. How can I speak for us?
Oh, but it does make sense, Jeeva said. That this army is yours as well as mine, there is a grain of truth to that. So go. Talk to their great leader. See what he demands or wants. Then come back to us. If they keep you in there, have no fear. We will come soon after to rescue you.
I pulled Inezka over to me. You have been in the city once before. Will you come with me? She looked at the flag over the piken. Will they honor the flag? I can't promise it, I told her. She mulled it over. I'll come. I want to see their leader's face. I want to see if he realizes that he'll see his city taken by us. I smiled at her. We'll each have our victory soon, Inezka. Come.
We borrowed horses and rode out across the field behind the Pikan negotiator towards the gates of Pika, where even more soldiers waited for us. The steel doors shut once we were through, startling the horses with a loud rattle of chain as a giant weight fell down along the wall, the chains holding it, yanking at pulleys and more chains that slammed the inch-thick steel doors shut. The Pikans led us through the cobbled streets, past fearful farmers camped with their livestock in what had once been markets, but were now shelters as they waited for the battle to begin. We followed the Pikans up the steep, cramped streets, where we could hardly see the sky due to the 2- and 3-story buildings leaning in over us. It reminded me slightly of Lesser Kime, and I shivered as the horses' shoes echoed loudly around us. At the top of Pika, a final set of walls ringed an interior castle. Again, chains and weights rattled to shut the doors behind us. The Hierarch of Pika waited for us by the battlements, the wind whipping at his robes.
The Keeper of the Way, the Enforcer of the Culling, and the Ruler of Pika, Hierarch Ixalan, will speak with you, the negotiator told us, and waved his hand in a bow toward the Hierarch.
From up here, I could look out over the city, out into the fields where our armies gathered in loose clumps around the patchwork quilts of farmland and irrigation.
I called you here to ask what it would take for you to surrender, Ixalan said.
I folded my arms. You could have sent a message.
I wanted you to see I was serious.
Ixalan held his hands out.
And I wanted to see this legendary executioner with my own eyes. I wanted to know what it would take to get you to stop this suicidal attack.
You can give me back my children, I said simply. Their names are Set and Joram. I have traveled from Kime past Mimistiva, and all along the spice road on the coast to your lands. I survived the unprovoked attack on the great caravan by your people, and now I have finally arrived. Ixalan looked down at the ground.
I did not know the names of your children, but I know that the children from Kime, where you hailed from, have all left. They are on their way to the Southern Isles. They have chosen the way. Their pilgrimage has begun. There is no calling them back until they are done. They have chosen the paths their lives will take them on.
When did they leave? I demanded.
You will not catch them.
When?
I shouted at him. The Hierarch smiled. If you were to leave now, on horseback,
You might catch the last of the ships that are leaving.
I ran to the edge of the wall, looking at the roads down to the gates and out of the city. Anezka touched my arm. I turned and looked into her wide eyes.
Will you go? She asked me.
Would I go? All I'd ever wanted was my family back. Could I have it by running for the harbor, far at the end of the valley? Or was it a trick? Was it just a way for Ixalan to get me out of the way before the battle? You should surrender, I said, turning back to Ixalan. If you want to offer things like guarantees that families will no longer be pulled apart, that the Cullings will stop, that you will reign peacefully over the coast, then maybe we can discuss your future.
I can only offer those things if you promise me that the Bramble will cease appearing, or deliver me a way the Bramble can be defeated through alchemical means, which my spies say the Blue City has, Ixalan said. The southern isles my people hail from are small and carefully maintained. The sickness your people create from these lands floats to ours. Bramble cannot be destroyed. It can only be burned and hacked back, I snapped. It is a curse we must all suffer. If you think Keim knows otherwise, you should ask Magister Skax.
I have. Those envoys he returns to me in a box, missing the rest of their bodies.
Then you have as much influence over Skax as I have.
So the culling must continue, and magic use must be checked to save ourselves, Ixalan said, and we are at an impasse. Your people have to realize that there are consequences for your actions.
Consequences? You speak of consequences? I spat at the raider. Come stand at your walls here and look out at the consequences of your actions. Out there is an army that you have created with your actions.
Ixalan did look out. Then he looked back at me. It is hardly an army. You want me to surrender by giving me a great show of numbers, but there are barely 400 men out there. The rest of your army is made of women, old maids. They call it the Widow's Army, and you've only had months to train them. I will plow through them, and my elephants will scatter your old women before us like dogs.
Indeed, I said. I've seen the remains of wars, and the men never seem to remember the women running from the sword as they guided the army's pack horses to the front line, and they always forget who bandaged the wounded through every skirmish. When the songs are sung about great battles, the women who helped sustain, feed, and build the army, who donated their husbands to the cause, they are always somehow forgotten. You forget that they are just as good at war as men. They fade in your memory only because they didn't share the glory of the front line, even though they often shared the losses and deaths. Now these women at your walls, you've ripped their lives from them. They have nothing to live for but vengeance. Their daughters, their sons, and their husbands are gone. Their farms are burned. Their means of living are nothing but rubble. They are the walking dead, and are animated for one thing only, and that is revenge. I walked over to Ixalan and stared into the calm eyes. These women fear death little. Far less than the men you've paid to man these walls, or the ones who fight for some distant philosophy imported from your distant islands? Will your arrows stop the walking dead? Will your walls? Remember, this army welcomes death, because at least then it means they will find some sort of peace that has been taken from them. Can you fight an army created out of the pain of all who've lost their families, Ixalan? I saw Ixalan's eyes flicker toward the fields outside the city. A seed of doubt in there. His face looked pale, his eyes tired, and he suddenly seemed as if he'd shrunken in on himself.
It is a challenge to my faith that we have achieved so little here on this coast, he said. When we first came to Pica to spread the way, we were attacked. After we took Pica, we built it up even stronger so that we could protect our Aftans and temples. And to defend ourselves,
We trained larger and larger forces. You all were so resistant to the way, and it was so much easier to teach to the orphans from your wars and collapsed cities, that soon it became easier to bring the collapse ourselves. It is often only in destruction that many can rebuild themselves. That is how it was with us. Ixalan looked back from the army outside his city walls to me, and I realized the man was shaken.
These cycles will never stop. We will always destroy ourselves.
What in all the holes are you talking about? I asked.
He's talking about the way, Anezka said. Tell him to shut up and let's leave.
But Ixalan ignored her.
The five survivors found the way. They were discovered on the southmost isle, forgotten, unable to build boats. The five were all that remained of a whole island that had fought and killed itself, leaving the survivors to starve. My ancestors brought the five back to the civilized isles. At first, the five grew fat and happy, and enjoyed the sweet breezes and palm shade, until they observed war between the islands. They grew troubled, and were beset with visions of destruction and woe. They preached their visions on the streets together, and starved themselves so that their ribs were like the hulls of half-finished ships. They were hung for inciting riots, but their martyrdom spread their message, their visions of the future, and the way spread, the understanding that the island of our world was all that there was. To reach out to fight for things that could not be shared would only bring us cannibalism, death, and the laughter of the gods.
Ixalan looked at me now.
So I have brought destruction and chaos, but only to prevent even worse. I want to save this world.
By destroying it first, I said.
We are a practical people, Ixalan said. We are taught not to love things, to live austere lives, and focus on productivity and wholeness. Such things that must be done are not inherently good. Even your people recognize this. It is like a parent spanking a child, or like one of your leaders, who must use an executioner to kill magic users. We must pass the way on by any means to your lands. It must be done.
Then you are locked into your path, and I mine, I told him.
We are tools, forged by the ripples of what has been done, quenched in the blood of our actions. Come, Ixalan said, walking toward a turret door. I have something to show you.
We followed him as he opened the door into a dim room. Two guards stood inside, and at a table a large form sat in manacles by a bowl of fruits. Jal, is that you? I moved closer, and he looked up. He raised manacle-stained wrists to shield his eyes from the light.
Ah, the executioness. I hear you are at the walls with an army now. You've come far.
Ixalan stepped between us.
I could hand him back over to you. I could allow the caravan to run again.
It's too late for that, I said. I wasn't going to suddenly change everything just because Ixalan had found Jal. He was no lover or family member, just an employer, an acquaintance. Ixalan had maybe thought I had been a caravanner, and that he was offering me a deal.
I see that. Then I offer a mutual agreement. I will keep him here, safe for you, Ixalan said. If you promise me something, because I believe you're a person of your word.
I could hear the threat implicit. If I didn't agree, Jal would be killed. Ixalan seemed to think that would weigh heavy on me. Let him think it. I didn't care.
What is it? I asked. Do not kill the priests. Make them leave, but do not kill them. They teach the way. They are not responsible for the culling. That lies on me and the others who serve with me. The moral weight of the culling lies only with me and my soldiers. Would you agree?
I looked back at Jal in the shadows of the room, then at Ixalan.
I will say yes, but only because I do not want to draw the judgment of Borzai for killing holy men.
no matter what gods they serve. We must all walk in the halls of the gods someday. Ixalan nodded.
I'm sorry we could not come to a peace.
You forsook it the moment you rode with soldiers against children,